rain on your skin. No one else can feel it for you. Only you can let it skin. No one else, no one else can speak the words on your skin.
Welcome.
It's that song, but all skin.
Yes, yeah, it's Unskinton.
Unskinton.
The rest is still Unskinton.
That's beautiful. I woke you up this morning with
Pocketful of Sunshine.
Natasha Bedingfield's classic Pocketful of Sunshine.
You know what's crazy about that song?
Naked Dancing.
Naked Dancing is so cool of you. My favorite part was when you got into the hamper and just posed.
Oh, yeah. I forget which part of the song drove me to do that.
Well, the thing about that song is that it's only the chorus.
It's only a chorus.
It's and it's over and over again.
But then there's the bridge.
There's the
bridge. Take me for a ride. The sun is on your side.
Nobody knows where the rivers flow. And they're going skin.
Skin.
Mashup.
Hi, welcome to Trans in Love,
a podcast
where we talk about being trans.
Land in love.
Because we are, because we're married.
We're married. We did that. I got a ring on it.
I never wear my ring because I'm always scared to lose it.
I got a bone to pick with you.
Pick my bones.
You never wear it.
I know, because I'm scared to lose it because I lost the first one.
Yeah, but the first one, I understand being scared to lose the first one, but the second one we got, it was like a $15 ring.
They don't know that.
You're right. It's
gorgeous.
It's a beautiful ring. The first one was more expensive.
The first one was expensive, period.
Yeah. But this one, I feel like you should be free.
I mean, I am freer with it, but I still, I don't want to lose this one. This one, to me, is more magic than the first one. No offense.
You know, I understand, because it was a beautiful moment.
It was a beautiful moment. Tell them about it. I'll tell you. So I lost my ring, my actual engagement ring that Elle gave me. I don't know. So at some point, like really soon after I got it.
Yeah, like a few months.
Yeah. And it was expensive.
Yeah.
And it was like a little, it looked like a chain pattern just on the top. And it was really pretty. And then we were like in, what is it?
Joshua Tree.
And we went to one of the little shops. And I had this feeling in my gut, like we were going to find my new replacement ring.
Yeah. And there it was a bizarre shop. Like
weird.
There was nothing else in there that we wanted.
No. And then they had jewelry cases and I looked at the jewelry cases and it was like a ring that said bitch on it and like skulls and stuff. And I was like, I don't know why I'm looking at this.
Yeah. And then a perfect chain ring that was just your size was right there.
It would fit my chunky little ring finger perfectly.
And then we went outside and I got on my knees and I sucked you
up.
And I proposed again.
Yeah. And this time it was so magic because it was like, it really was.
It happened in real time.
It was like an intuitive feeling. Like I knew I was going to find it and then we found it.
Yeah, that was a beautiful experience.
It really was. It was magic.
You should wear your ring more.
I know.
What if you put it on a necklace?
I don't think that would be my vibe.
Okay.
Personally,
we'll figure something out.
I wear this almost every day.
You're right.
Too bad you didn't give me this shell for our engagement. It would be convenient.
If only I gave you a shell necklace to propose to you. I got a proposition.
What?
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You woke up in a good mood.
I woke up... Well, no, actually, that's not true.
Really?
I danced my way into a good mood.
Wow.
By waking you up to Pocket Full of Sunshine. Mm-hmm. Call back to earlier.
Yeah. Call back to like...
I woke up sad. I woke up really, really sad. Mm-hmm. And my head hurt and my throat hurt a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I was like... I was like disappointed to be alive for a moment. Classic mornings.
Classic.
And then I went downstairs to let the dogs out, and then I closed the door to our bedroom.
You sure did.
And I locked them out of it.
You sure did.
And I was like, I'm going back to bed.
Yeah.
And then our dear friend Riley started texting me, and I was like, I love my friends.
Yeah.
And then I got in a better and better mood. And
I love
And then I was like, Natasha, where you at, girl?
And then you summoned Mrs. Bedingfield. And
and I really, really wanted to get you... like energized right away because mornings are difficult for you sometimes.
Yeah, I have slow mornings. And you know why we were talking about this is because we have two giant dogs and one pretty normal sized kitten. They sleep with us in our bed. We have a king size bed. That's pretty big.
Flex.
Flex, right? And which honestly, I feel like queens should be bigger because women are bigger.
Spiritually. You heard it here. Trans in love.
Women are bigger than men. So honestly, king size bed is transphobic.
You're right.
We should change it to queen.
This is the new platform. You're.
This is the hill that I'm going to murder on. I'm gonna okay. So
we sleep with our animals.
We sleep with our animals, and they take up a lot of space.
They are so big.
Yeah, and we don't stress that enough. Very well.
No.
And so we wake up, and So you get up before me, because you have more zest for life in the mornings.
Typically.
And then what happens is you take the dogs out, and then you close the door, and that's when I finally can hit that REM.
But I lately haven't been doing that because you'll sleep till noon.
Yeah.
Otherwise, and I miss you.
Yeah, so I understand.
I selfishly wake you up before that.
Because we've been staying up until 2 a.m. watching Lost.
We have been watching Lost.
Great show.
It's an incredible show.
Oh my God. I was thinking before we started this podcast, like, wow, I can't wait to watch Lost later.
Yeah. Lost and crocheting.
Mm-hmm. And I just sit there.
Sometimes you play your game.
Sometimes I play my basketball game because sometimes I feel like if I'm just sitting there and you're crocheting,
it's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing. I feel like, what am I even doing here?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's something that you probably didn't know about me.
I kind of got the vibe.
Yeah.
Because usually when I bust out my crochet, you bust out your basketball game real quick.
Yeah.
So this episode, we wanted to talk about sobriety.
Sobriety. But
before we do that, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good. I woke up. I think I'm a little manic today. Mm. I mean, womanic. I mean, themic. I'm a little themic today.
This is why we don't have rights.
Yeah. This is why we have wrongs. I feel really good. I feel incredibly caffeinated because I had a coffee this morning and I drank it pretty quick. I went to get my nails done. Awesome. Thank you, Moha at Ahihik Nails. Love her. Love this color. Love this color.
It's so pretty.
It's a beigey pink. Mm, it's my favorite. And I got a matcha there. And then, yeah, I had a matcha. And then we went to Donna's Donuts.
Secrets in this relationship.
I entered the car with a matcha.
No way.
Yes, I did. And then we went to Donna's Donuts, and I have this right here, this like cappuccino frappe. Mm. So I'm really caffeinated.
Got it.
And I'm in a great mood.
You seem like it.
Can you tell?
Yeah. I think so. I went to Walmart while you were getting your nails done.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a dissociated time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a really packed Walmart.
Really?
Today. Very busy.
What's with that? It's Tuesday.
I ran into so many people's carts by accident.
Oh, no.
Like, crashed.
Oh, my gosh.
Everyone was like, yeah. And I was one of them. I'm not, you know,
yeah,
saying I wasn't a part of that.
Yeah. I feel like you can't go into a Walmart present. You have to dissociate.
You're right.
It feels sad in there.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it brings us joy that they have the things we want. And after living in a small Mexican town for a few months, like, Walmart feels like a luxury.
Feels like Target.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, it's the only thing close to Target.
Yeah. Here. But if you spend too long in a Walmart.
Not that we shopped at Target once we started boycotting Target.
We boycotted Target. We started boycotting. We started girl cutting Target. What's the patriarchy is alive and raw.
And raw.
The patriarchy is
fucking us in the ass.
The patriarchy is fucking me in the butt right now. So anyway, we girl cutted Target. Yeah. So yeah, I'm all to say I'm doing good. I'm feeling good today. I'm feeling manic, which I think is honestly a good place to do a podcast from because we're gonna fill this time, but we're gonna be like, are we done? It's been 10 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good place to start a podcast with the topic being sobriety,
right?
Too.
Right. Because I'm high on caffeine.
This is the gift we get in sobriety, is the moments, little bursts of mania,
mm-hmm,
that we, yes, get to enjoy just for, you know, until it goes away. And then we are left with,
mm-hmm,
the reality of our circumstance, which is that we are raw dogging this life.
We're raw dogging life the way the patriarchy is raw dogging my butt.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When that mania comes, what sparks that mania for you?
I used to try to trigger it like on purpose, but I don't think I can. I think it was all just like, I would just throw pasta at the wall, trying to see what would stick. So sometimes I would do like intentional sleep deprivation, or like,
whoa,
I would like not eat for an entire day and see if that would do it. And you know, sometimes it would work, but it wasn't consistent.
Yeah. You ever get up too fast and you get a head rush, and then like right after it feels like good?
No, I don't get that. But I watch you do that. Ask the listeners if that's a experience.
You ever get up? Sometimes I just get up too fast just to get one little high.
Do you really do that on purpose?
No. It happens and I'm like, whoa, I don't like this.
You look like you don't like it.
Yeah, but then what happens is like I kind of disappear, but then it creates like tingles down my body and it feels good.
Wow.
And then as I'm like recalibrating, I'm like, whoa, I'm like, that feels kind of nice.
Wow.
And then here I am like, I don't know if I'm an addict. No.
We all come to it in our own time, or we don't.
Yeah.
Or we don't.
I'd say that my mania stems from being caffeinated and also dissociation, which we've talked about before on this pod. And also today, because I'm getting all of these documents from FFS. That it's feeling so close and real and hot and sexy, and I'm so excited.
They are being so thorough, this surgery center. Mm-hmm. They are sending L, like, and then you're going to take 3 steps to the left, and you'll see a door on the right, and that's where you'll meet our dear receptionist, Linda, who's going to shake your hand and look you in the eye and say, welcome, my dear daughter. Mm-hmm.
And then kiss you on the lips.
And kiss you, make out with you.
Make out with you.
And your whole body.
Make out with my body. Yeah, I'm so excited. I feel like this is going, like, this is the best possible case scenario for this. I feel like at this place, I'm going to be so, just coddled. And I need that.
Yeah.
Also interesting that we've also talked about this on, like, a past episode about surgery. Like, how I think this journey of sobriety is going to be interesting having a surgery, because it's such a shakeup in your physical and emotional being.
Yes.
That it's kind of feels like often like a test for sobriety.
I was 60 days sober when I got my first top surgery.
Wow.
The botched one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really significant to me because I got to take painkillers.
Right.
And I was like really excited about it, you know? But I was so like immersed in program in like 12 step that like I had so much support. Like I had friends come over and do like have a meeting at my grandma's house in our backyard. Wow. It was like 5 friends and we sat on the concrete and had a meeting.
That is so sweet.
Yeah. And I had just met them like 2 months ago. Wow. You know, I was like really fresh, but the way that people showed up for me in those early days was so significant and it really helped me. So they suggested that I like give my pill bottle to my grandma, my alcoholic grandmother, and she would like dole them out for me and like take care of it.
Wow, that's so nice.
Yeah.
She took care of you.
But I really wanted to just not. I just wanted to hide them.
Right. And,
you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But the accountability thing is really important.
Yeah.
Sober.
Pain meds is real. Cause they gave me Percocet when I was in college and I got a cyst removed from my ass crack.
Yeah.
They put me under for that. Shaved my entire butt. Didn't tell me they were gonna.
Mm.
And I was like looking at my butt. I was like, why does it look different? And I was like,
your cheeks and everything.
Cheeks and everything. And they used something that like turned it kind of orangey.
Oh, iodine.
They used iodine on my ass cheeks. And so I was like looking at my butt. I was like, who's this? What's this Oompa Loompa looking ass?
Yeah. No and, hair.
No hair. Fresh. Shaved. honestly, a dream these days. I'm tired of shaving my butt.
Yeah.
What was I talking about? No, I was talking about they gave me Percocet, yes. And that was the first time that I realized that, like, pain meds were, like, a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I was taking them for social purposes. Mm-hmm. And then I remember, like, I would get cranky when I wouldn't take it. And then I would take it, and then I would get not cranky, and I'd be like, it just makes me feel like my best self.
Mm.
And it's, like, kind of sad that it's true.
Yeah.
But that's why they're so dangerous.
Yeah. They feel awesome.
Yeah.
They take away all the pain.
They shirt every level of it.
Every drip.
Gosh.
Every last drop. Yeah.
And you know what's annoying is, like, how could something that feels so good be so bad?
I don't know. It's what's annoying. What's up with that? It's so annoying. It is annoying.
Yeah.
I wish that I could do drugs and not want to kill myself.
Totally. And a reason why this week's episode is about sobriety is because it's your 8-year birthday on Sunday. Your 8th year of sobriety birthday.
Oh, it was.
It was.
It was already. It passed.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
To you.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I'm really proud.
Do you feel weird? Tell me how you feel different now versus 8 years ago.
Well, I think there's, like, a natural aging that goes on in your 20s. And yeah. I spent my entire 20s, like, trying to get sober, at least. Like, I walked into program when I was 21. And then 5.5 months later, I relapsed and I had to reset my date to a different date. And I was 22. So I can't say that I got sober at 21, but I really wish I could.
Yeah.
And it's like one of those stupid things that doesn't matter to anyone but mm-hmm. me.
I feel like that seems like a rare thing.
To get sober that young?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Was there anyone your age at those meetings?
No, I was definitely the youngest. But there were a few people in their, like, mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think, like, the biggest difference is that I was able to be shown how to take care of myself as an adult. And, like, I had role models for the first time in my life, like, mm-hmm. real role models that, like, were teaching me lessons, like, how to like, structure my weeks so that I don't, like, have a laundry explosion after a month of, like, forgetting to do laundry and, like, showering every day and, like, having a routine. These are things that, like, are so simple, but I was taught by people in program that were helping me get sober.
So would you say that your sobriety has helped you with your ADHD?
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
Definitely. They, like, went hand in hand for me.
Cool.
I used to use weed as a way to, like, hyper focus on a task that I needed to do. Mm-hmm. I used to think that was what I was doing.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't.
Become something else.
Yeah. There was just no way to control it. But I do remember thinking, I'm medicating myself because of my ADHD when I would get high.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't doing anything for me.
Yeah, totally.
But it was sweet to think.
Yeah. It's interesting because you got sober in Marijuana's Anonymous.
Yeah.
Which is, are we allowed to talk about this?
Yeah. I mean, okay. I do. I tend to, like, not specify, but it's just because of, like, old timers who got mad at me for, like, sharing about it.
Right.
I don't know. I don't really agree with that aspect of, like, I don't think that there's anything wrong with sharing openly about which program it was.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I just do.
Yeah. Cause there's no Yeah. So, but what's interesting is that, like, I think widely, like, that's not often, like, how people view sobriety is through marijuana. Like,
no way.
Like, people don't see, like, there are people who, like, there's the whole California sober thing where it's like, they're like, I'm sober, but they smoke weed.
It's, like, typically the exception.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, like, I remember believing this, that, like, weed is, like, the safest drug. Mm-hmm. And that, I might even still believe that, but I don't know. But I think that like the idea that you can't get, addicted to it is like a myth.
Yeah, it's absolutely a myth.
Because you can get addicted to anything. Like, yeah. You can get addicted to things that aren't like inherently like addictive. Like,
yeah, like My Strange Addiction. Anyone?
Right.
Like, you can get addicted to anyone. Drinking gasoline.
Right.
Or whatever. Eating sponges.
Gasoline.
Getting stung by bees. Eating rocks.
Eating rocks. I think the sponge. Wait, okay. Okay, complete side note. What's the most disgusting My Strange Addiction you've seen?
I don't like the one where she's eating makeup. I don't like that one.
Yeah, that one's hard.
The metallic. She's like, I like the metallic ones the best. She likes the idea of them coating her insides in beautiful colors. That grosses me out. I don't like that.
Was My Strange Addiction, like, did they help them? Or did they just exploit them?
I don't remember. They probably, it's probably not good.
Yeah.
It's probably bad.
But, okay, circling back, what are, like, your beliefs on like what was the turning point for you when you realized that like weed was a problem?
Well, I tried so hard to like stay in the dark about that in my own mind. Like, mm-hmm. I was lying to myself for a long time, or like avoiding the truth for a while. And I have like, I used to journal every day during this time in my life when I was like 21, 22. And I have so many pages of journal entries of going back and forth, justifying the way that I used weed, because it was like I was getting into spirituality and meditation largely because I was getting high and I was like able to sit with myself. Mm. And then I kept coming back to this like inner knowing that weed was stopping me from like reaching my highest potential. And then I'd be like, never mind. I hate meditation now. Like, I'm good. Like, it was just like, it was like a back and forth constantly, like trying to avoid this knowing that it was killing me. And when I say killing me, like I've heard it said, like being a marijuana addict is like getting kicked to death by bunny rabbits.
Whoa.
Like, it takes a long time and it feels gentle. But eventually it gets you.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And
where it's more like widely aware that like alcoholism causes liver issues and like it's not as like as direct and clear the ways that marijuana like affects you. You might lose a lot of people on this one, because
that's okay. Like, I think that it's getting more and more common to like come to this realization though.
Yeah.
Like, I have a lot of people who DM me about this.
Wow.
Or whenever I talk about it publicly, people reach out to me about it, because it is really normalized to use weed like every single day, wake and bake well into the nighttime, because it is easy to like kind of seem functional. But for me, it was just a really dull existence, and I wasn't able to like fully be present for the folks I loved. And I was just like this kind of stoner fuck up that was late all the time and didn't really take accountability. And I couldn't really make appointments for myself. Like, I just like couldn't imagine getting top surgery and like all the steps that would take. Like, it was too overwhelming. And I do attribute that to the way that I used weed,
because
it was so easy to just like, all of a sudden, like, I'd get high and I'd look around at my trash box apartment and be fine with the fact that it was disgusting.
Yeah.
And it made it okay to just like coast.
Yeah.
And the reason I got sober so early is because I had such big dreams. And when I realized that I wasn't going to achieve those dreams because of the way that I used weed, I started trying to limit my usage and put rules on it. And then I'd break those rules immediately. And that's when I was like, oh, this is addiction. Cause I keep promising myself that I'm not going to get high. And then I blink and I'm exhaling smoke. Like what is that then?
Yeah.
If it's not addiction, what is that?
Yeah.
Cause I keep telling myself I'm not going to do this. And then I keep doing it.
Right.
And no matter what kind of rules I put on it, I couldn't follow them, cause I wasn't in control.
Yeah. And that like sacrifices your like self-trust, which sacrifices your self-worth.
Yeah.
Which when you have low self-worth, it's really hard to be a functioning member of society.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was so easy to just like see suicide as an option at that point in my life. Cause I was so young. I had so little context for like what could change and like how I might experience life differently one day. Cause you know, in your early 20s, everything just feels so dramatic and like nothing could ever feel different.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was like, I remember just being like, ugh, like what is the fucking point? I'll never be able to like feel any different.
Yeah.
You know? And it was so much easier to feel that way, to feel so doomed when I was high 24/7.
Right.
But then what the gift about being a marijuana addict is that like, I had no energy to actually, act on any of the suicidal ideation.
Right.
I was like, I'll do it tomorrow. Yeah. But
what a weird gift.
I know. There's a lot of weird gifts about being a marijuana addict, I think.
We've talked a bit about in our separate journeys of sobriety, like how to stay sober while trying to soften any sense of demonization of the thing that we're sober from, like alcohol and weed. Like not demonizing weed.
Yeah.
But instead not acting on something that we know is not good for us.
Right. Specifically as individuals.
When like starting out as being sober, like I don't know if I ever really went through a period of demonization, like where I was like, this is a bad thing, like that I need to like run away from. It was more like, okay, I know how I'm engaging in this is a problem. And I just wonder, like, for you, what that journey has been and where you are now with that. Because at first, like, would you say that like it was like put the cross up like for weed and alcohol?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It was a lot harder for me, though, to see nuance back then. Mm. And I think our ages have something to do with it, you know?
Makes sense.
Like, I was so young, and you already had... You just had so much more experience under your belt with using these things in different ways. And, like, I think, too, like, your mind had already been so opened, you know, like, and I think mine was just sort of, I was just really in black and white thinking where it was like, once I had I finally realized that I was an addict and I used that word for the first time. I remember the night I was like, okay, if this is something I'm addicted to, if this is a drug that I'm addicted to, like I have to see it as a drug. I have to see it as bad as heroin or whatever. Like it was just like there was no nuance to it, because for me I was so stressed about my life and like all the things that I hadn't gotten done yet. And then once I had this answer and I was like, wow, okay, I'm a drug addict, this is a drug, I've been doing this drug every single day since I was like 16, I need to like stop doing this drug.
Right.
It was just like, I found this program that also saw it that way. And it was just like, all right, like there's no need to find the gray areas right now. This is helping me to just see it as this like evil thing.
Yeah. You know? And that makes a lot of sense to me that's like how one might have to like see it in order to like combat the addiction.
Cause
it's like, if there's any gray area, that's going to become a door for justification.
And, exactly.
And it makes a lot of sense. It's interesting, as you're talking about this, how I feel like being like sobriety as a door to yourself and as a door to like creating the life that you knew you could create for yourself. It's just like, I can't not see the correlations between like transness it's like where there's this voice saying that what you're doing right now doesn't feel good.
Right.
Like there's this dissonance that is so loud and painful. And then once you name it and you free it, it's like, oh, this is how you move through life in integrity and in truth, is by listening to the voice of saying like, this feels good, this feels bad.
Yeah.
And it's like that inner guidance, I think we are like, it is so normalized to ignore in a capitalist society. And I think for me, well, for both of us, transness came first.
Absolutely.
Do you think you could have gotten sober if you hadn't been out as trans?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I wouldn't feel the need to protect a person that I didn't recognize.
Mm, for sure.
You know, I remember like, I think it's a miracle that I transitioned in the first place, because like when I was 18, I was in the peak of my like drug and alcohol using. Mm-hmm. And I still managed to find a free clinic in San Francisco and get my ass on the subway to go to that appointment and like figure out how to get on testosterone when I had never even gone to like a regular doctor before. I was raised on like homeopathy and Chinese herbs, and I didn't have a real doctor. Like it was my first time like going into a clinic, and it was the weirdest thing. Like, and I just remember like being so stoned and so just like, I don't know where I am and what the fuck's going on. But all I know is that this voice is screaming at me that this is the answer. Yeah. And I had a lot of people telling me that that was not what I should be doing, that that shouldn't be the priority, that I should take care of other mental health stuff before I got
transitioned,
onto you. But I could not ignore that voice.
Right.
And then eventually I started seeing myself and I was like, that is somebody that I want to protect. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, whatever. It was just very intertwined.
Yeah. And it's the same voice. Yeah. That's what's cool.
Totally.
Is that like once, like whatever door you have to entering, like where that voice sits and lives, like that's always a way in.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so cool. And that's, I think, also why most of the people in our lives are sober or in some sort of recovery is because like that, requires a level of self-accountability that that to me allows for deep, meaningful connection.
I firmly believe that the only thing that you really need to get sober is to be able to be honest with yourself. Everything else can kind of be flexible as long as there's that, you know. Because there's no foundation to build without self-honesty.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the, I think the most profound thing that you've taught me is this sort of, this kind of accountability with yourself and with each other and an honesty, like a blunt honesty. You've always been someone who can't help but be incredibly honest. And for me, that was both incredibly healing and triggering at the beginning of our relationship.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that can happen at the same time.
Oh, I just remember like learning in our early relationship that there were good, better moments to be super, super honest with each other. Like, I remember just like, I don't know, there was one time we were like not gonna see each other for like a while. Mm-hmm. One of us was going on a trip and then I like dropped some like truth bomb on you.
You're like, actually, I'm going to be away for 2.5 weeks.
That's what it was.
And
yeah.
I was like, and it was right before we were going to a party.
Yeah. And then, I just had that flashback. That was so funny.
Right.
And then I was like, wow, like it's good to be honest, but also like considerate of,
like timing.
Yeah. Timing. Yeah. It's mostly timing.
Yeah. But I think while that was like triggering, because I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm, like I have a lot of feelings of like abandonment. That's like the biggest trigger for me. It was also comforting knowing that you can't stand for a second keeping something from me. And that's literally the biggest reason why I have so much trust in our relationship is because I've witnessed you struggle to keep anything from me, even if keeping it for like a couple hours longer would maybe be more quote unquote considerate.
Sure.
There's so much more ease that I feel knowing that, that you can't help but just say it.
Yeah.
And that's something that I was not. I was the person who would just like keep hard things in and process them on my own, and I wouldn't share them with you. And throughout our relationship, I've worked really hard to share things with you before I've processed them and wrapped them up in a pretty bow.
Yeah.
And that has been healing too. And the thing is, I think actually now that I'm thinking about it, like, healing comes from being triggered and then knowing that we're safe.
Mm-hmm.
In this context.
Yeah, in this context. In this context. Sure. Being able to like trust each other to like hold one another while we move through whatever the trigger is.
Right.
And like having a different experience with this thing, mm-hmm. that, you know, the trauma at one point decided that that was something we were going to be, you know, affected by, mm-hmm. or whatever. For whatever reason, probably because we had to go through it alone and probably because we were kids and scared and just saw the world through a child's perspective, which is often skewed and yeah. weird. And then to get triggered as an adult with a loving partner, it's like you get to rewire mm-hmm. your brain
yeah.
and like move through the experience in a completely different way.
Yes. Redig the pathways.
Yeah.
And when your body is telling you you're safe, but then repeatedly again, I'm sorry, your body is telling you that you're unsafe.
Yeah.
And then repeatedly again and again, you're proven by this other person that you are safe. That is what the rebuilding of those trauma pathways, that's the process.
Oh my God. Yeah. I remember that time that we went to San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was so hard.
You were still drinking.
Oh, wow.
And
wait, was I?
Yeah, because I got triggered by the taste of alcohol on your breath. Oh,
yes, I was drinking.
And that was one of my first like fall apart moments with you,
mm-hmm.
where I was so afraid of, this was right before we had that conversation where mm-hmm. I shared that I needed to set some boundaries.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And we like had dinner and you were going through it. You were like pretty depressed on our way there.
Mm-hmm. Cause I had gotten a message from the people who did my hair transplant after I called them out for misgendering me consistently, saying like, don't you think we deserve a bit of grace? It was right. Scalding.
You were going
I was
through
so,
it.
Oh yeah. Ugh. I was in a bad place. We both were.
And I was like, I was sad because it was just a really challenging time mm-hmm. in our lives. We were going through your recovery from hair surgery together mm-hmm. and it was just like a really challenging time because mm-hmm. we weren't having silly, dumb, stupid fun.
Mm-mm.
And it was the first time we'd never had that consistently. Yeah. But I just remember like tasting the alcohol on your breath after dinner, and we were at the Hard Rock Hotel. We were staying at the Hard Rock Hotel, which yeah. already was so weird.
Yeah.
And then I remember like realizing that I needed to say something mm. because I had been trying in our entire relationship up till then to be okay with kissing you, and tasting the alcohol
mm-hmm.
And trying to see it in a way that like was sexy even, or like that, like, you know, whatever. I was just trying a bunch of different ways to see it. And it wasn't working this time. And I was like, holy shit, I'm going to have to say something. And Elle is going to leave me.
Oh, wow.
And that's why I broke down.
Mm.
Because I was so afraid that if I had said something, you would get offended.
Wow.
And then be like, I can't deal with dating somebody who's this sensitive.
Wow.
And then, yeah, like, I freaked out.
Yeah.
I mean, I was, like, going through a fucking, like, PTSD
breakdown,
scream crying, mm-hmm. shaking, mm-hmm. running away into the bathroom.
Yeah.
Fetal position.
Yeah. And you were just, I just remember God. You, like, crying and saying, like, you're going to leave me.
And I don't think we ever really talked about this.
No. Yeah. Like, I haven't thought about this in a while.
Yeah.
Like, this specific instance, because I think it was, like, overshadowed kind of about the when I got sober.
Yes.
I think that at the time, it wasn't clear that, to me, that that's what needed to happen.
Yeah, totally.
To me, like, not just for you, but for me. But, like, I don't know if it was the way you phrased it or the way that I received it. It felt like you were putting the blame on yourself.
I was.
Yeah. You were just like, I'm broken. I'm a problem. And all that I wanted to do was hold you and tell you that you weren't.
Yeah.
And,
God.
But there was a piece of me that knew that eventually that, like, drinking would become a problem for me and for us in our relationship.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that was my passive way of that voice telling me that, like, I wasn't engaging healthily with it. And also because I think the way that I was engaging with it socially was so normalized. Just like you go out and dance and then you drink as much as you can until you can't anymore.
Yeah.
Like, but then I think to me, I was so dissociated from the fact that I was like drinking alone at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also that was because of during the pandemic, like that's how I got through it. And also, like, I think this is something interesting is that I sort of like credit me coming to terms with my transness to the fact that I was fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I would have been able to break down my walls if I wasn't high and drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I was drinking too much, but at that point, during quarantine specifically, I just threw up all accountability
mm-hmm.
because it was like, okay, all we have to do is just get through this time.
Yeah.
And I was living like in a place where we were, that's just how we got through it. We were, and I'll tell you, like, I had fun.
Yeah.
It was like, I had so much fun just being fucked up. And when we first started dating, like the days you would come over to my place were the days that I didn't drink. And then the way that I grappled with like being in a polyamorous dynamic was that, okay, well, when Ezra's gone, then I get to like get fucked up by myself.
That was your partner.
Yes. Exactly.
I'd go with my other mm-hmm. partner and you would
go with mine.
Go with yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I never actually believed that it was a problem, which is like, until we had that conversation.
Yeah.
Which let's talk about the conversation that honestly changed the trajectory of my life and our relationship.
Yeah. I think like leading up to that conversation, I had been talking to my friend from program, mm-hmm. Josh. And I had shared with him that I thought maybe there was a problem
mm-hmm.
and that the only thing that was stopping me from proposing to you was this elephant in the room.
Mm.
And I was so like excited to spend my life with you. But then every time I would think about that, the first thing that would shut that thought down was Elle's drinking
mm-hmm.
is going to be a problem mm-hmm. for me one day.
Yeah.
And I was so afraid. I was so afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get to a place before that conversation where I fully had to let go of you
mm-hmm.
and trust that, you know, like I'd be okay without you because mm-hmm. I was almost certain that you would leave me.
Wow.
And it was because I was projecting my own like experience with my substance stuff, dependency, whatever. And thinking, okay, if the roles were reversed, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
You know? And so it has little to do with you and more to do with just like my experience of dependency mm-hmm. on substances and like the ways that I chose drugs over love
mm-hmm.
in my past.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, that might happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we already had a place together and a dog. And I think we already had Winnie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, we were building this beautiful life together. And mm-hmm. I fully had to be like, I might walk away from this with nothing.
Yeah.
And I still did it.
Yeah.
Because I love you. Yeah. And I was like, if there's a chance that I can marry this person, I'm going to try everything that is in my power mm-hmm. to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I remember you had gone to a meeting.
Yeah.
And I, that's what it was. When you were out, I drank, like I got drunk. And I feel like maybe you tasted it on my breath when I got home or something. And then you went into your closet. And then you, like, were on the ground, just kind of, like, spiraling. Wow. And then I
have no memory of that. Yeah. That's crazy.
And I remember sitting down with you, and that's when you, like, were like, I need to set some boundaries with you.
Mm-hmm. And my boundaries, just so the listeners mm-hmm. understand,
mm-hmm.
My boundary was that if you had a drink, that I wouldn't be able to kiss you on the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you had gotten high, like if you were like stoned, I probably wouldn't want to hang out.
Yeah.
That I would just find something else to do.
Right.
And that I wouldn't hold it against you. And I wouldn't, it wouldn't be like a passive aggressive moment. It would be, I'm going to go choose to take care of myself while you are taking care of yourself.
Right.
And there was no request that you stop.
Yeah. Which was, I think, the greatest gift, was because I was faced with like choosing
mm-hmm.
between spending time with a person that I just wanted to spend time with all that, like spending time with my favorite person in the entire world, or spending time with my other partner and or getting fucked up. And then I realized, like, why does this feel so hard for me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why does this feel like such a threat to my life? And then that's when I realized that it was a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that at that time, protecting our relationship felt more important than protecting my relationship with myself, which I think helped me get sober.
Yeah.
And because I knew, like I said, I knew that eventually my drinking would be a problem too. We were sharing that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, it got to, we went out, and it was like the first night where I was like, okay, I'm not going to drink tonight. And it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, we went out to a club. We went out to a dance party. And I was just like, this is what you do?
I was like, welcome to my world.
You just come to this club.
Yeah.
And stand around these drunk, messy people. And just like what?
Babysit.
Yeah. And I was like, this isn't fun.
No.
It
wasn't fun.
No.
It wasn't fun.
No.
The way that I remember, like, going out with all of y'all mm-hmm. and y'all would be so plastered mm-hmm. and I'd be the only one sober.
Mm-hmm.
And I still just wanted to hang out with you.
Yeah.
I just didn't care.
Yeah.
At the time. I was just like, fucking, this person mm-hmm. is so funny.
Mm-hmm. And I think also what I realized was that when I would get drunk or high, I would feel close to you
yeah.
because my inhibitions would drop down. But something that I've noticed in sobriety now after 2 years is that, like, on the other end of that, it feels like you are so far away from the person if they're drunk or high and you're not. And it's like, it's just a completely different wavelength. A completely different energy that you're holding when you're drunk and high. And it while it was like an illusion of feeling close to you, actually what it was doing was throwing myself into a completely different state of being where you couldn't, you would join me, but ultimately you, like, we were far from each other when I was drunk or high and you weren't.
Yeah. And it was a, I was also younger too. Like, I think that the realization that this wasn't closeness wasn't always present with me because I was really trying to bury my head in the sand about the fact that I couldn't have friends that were always getting high and drunk anymore. And that, like, when I first got to LA and my, well, okay. When I first got to LA, I had a roommate who was also sober, but it was not, it was weird. But once I started making this friends with these people that we were hanging out with, that the mutual friends that we had together, and everyone was like very like early 20s partying. I just felt like I was part of something that was appropriate for my age for the first time in, I don't even know how long, you know, I felt like I had to grow up so fast when I got sober and I was hanging out with a bunch of old men who were like in their late 50s, early 60s, like having men's stag meetings for Marijuana Anonymous together at some guy's house in the valley. Like, that was my fun Thursday night. And it was fun, you know, but all of a sudden I was in this group of like trans influencers and we were all like hot and slutty and everyone was getting drunk and I just got to like live vicariously through everybody.
Right.
And so I had to like wean myself off of that high in a way.
Yeah.
Too, when I started realizing that like this was a problem for me.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting about getting sober is that you I realized how many places I went just as an excuse to drink and how much effort I would put into thinking about, okay, how much am I going to drink before? So then I'll feel this way here. And I think that's like a freedom that I didn't anticipate is just like not doing so much management of like my moods. It's just like when I thought that this was giving me relief from anxiety, actually what it was doing was contributing to it by creating it like taking away my reliability on myself of knowing like, okay, this is how I feel, this is why I feel it. When like you're drinking and smoking, like it messes so much with your state of mind and your state of being that then like, I don't know if I'm in a bad mood or I'm anxious because I'm hungover. I don't know if it's because like I got high yesterday and my body's reacting to that. I don't know if it's what I ate, you know, like now it's like taking away all of those factors so that like, if I have anxiety or if I have like, if I'm in a weird mood, like, I just have more control over my state of being.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, like the greatest gift and also partially like the thing that I miss the most is just getting a relief from what can feel like a mundane life.
Yeah. I get that. I remember feeling similarly when I was a couple years in. I feel like you've changed so much in the past 2 years.
It's true.
And I'm curious to know like what has affected your like relationship with your sobriety. Cause I know that like, well, okay, this is a multi-part question, but when you first got sober, I was really concerned that you were getting sober for me. And I'm just curious like how you held yourself accountable to like refrain from pinning all of your sobriety on me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that at the beginning, like, I mean, so there's the way that I was looking at it and the experience I was having. And those are not always the same thing.
That's real.
So the experience I was having was like, oh my God, I'm going to lose this person who that my spirit knows is the my favorite person in the world, the person I want to spend my life with. Like, and then that was like, that was the motivating factor of getting sober is that like, if there's going to be a wedge in our relationship, I will choose the relationship over whatever that wedge is because I just know this to be true that you and me. And, but my mind was also saying, this is for me. He never set a boundary saying that I can't. It's just like, okay, and also with your help over the years, realizing that like I need to hold myself accountable for my emotions and that I'm having an experience here. Mm-hmm. So what is this experience trying to tell me? And what it was telling me is that like, why is this so hard? Mm-hmm. If I don't have a problem, this shouldn't be so hard to say, to say no to.
Yeah.
And then as I started to experience the benefits of sobriety, that's when it transitioned to being like something that I knew was good for myself, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd say that it's like that me doing it for it's not just doing it for you, it's doing it for us, which is doing it for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always about protecting our relationship, which at the end of the day, wasn't just for you.
Right. Of course.
It was for me. Yeah. It was because I didn't want to be left by the best person I knew just because of a substance that like what? Like,
yeah.
But I remember like one of the hardest things for me, which I don't know if I've shared this with you, but was like thinking that like on our wedding day, like I'm not going to have champagne.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I do remember you saying something about that.
Which our wedding like had was nothing like that image that I had in my head.
No.
But I think I just remember like the only way I knew how to relate to at the time to my friends was by like getting higher drunk with them. Mm-hmm. And I dreamt of like getting drunk and dancing and then going to like a house with all the friends and getting high around a fire. And like, it's amazing how much my relationships centered around these experiences.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many relationships like fell off after sobriety. And it's amazing how many, the ones that have stayed, how they've shifted, how like, I think almost all the people in my life are relatively sober.
Yeah.
Like, or like they're either sober or like really not an addict.
Yeah. Like so normal. It's like, crazy.
Wow. How do you do that?
Yeah.
You just like go out and like have some drinks and then you like are chill about it.
Yeah.
And then you don't want to drink for a while after and that's you're fine insane. If we don't drink tonight. That's cool.
Yeah. I always say that if I could be like a casual drinker,
mm-hmm.
I drink all the time.
Yeah. Right.
But then that joke doesn't always land.
Yeah. But no, totally.
It takes.
It's funny. It's, wait, say it again.
If I were a casual drinker, if I could drink like a normal person, I'd drink all the time.
That's funny. Thank because you. Because it's hilarious, but it's too smart.
It's yeah. Just it never lands. Actually,
and I'll explain it to the listeners. It's because if you were drinking all the time, then you wouldn't be a casual drinker.
Right.
If I could be a casual drinker, I'm drunk right now.
Yeah. That's pretty good. No, it's not gonna work. It's just no one would. It's not funny. It's not funny enough. Yeah. It's smart.
Yeah. Totally. You know what's something that I think that I one day will be on the way to is no caffeine.
Yeah.
After me having three caffeinated beverages
when
today.
When we stayed with Clay and Maddie and they were like, mm-hmm. I don't drink my coffee. Great friends. I was like, fuck you. That's crazy.
Right. They were like, we don't have stimulants in this house. And here's the thing. My spirit knows that a lot of my anxiety is because of caffeine.
Yeah, same, probably.
My spirit knows it.
I'm not ready.
And I would rather take drugs that a doctor gives to me than stop drinking caffeine. Okay, wait, something that I want to talk about, though.
I take it back. Clay and Maddie, I didn't say fuck you in, like, a mean way.
No,
I said
it was
fuck
in, a, like,
you in, like, a jealous
you're
way.
You're doing the thing like, that we know thing. Is good for us.
By the way, I love you.
But I think, like, one thing that I struggle with still to this day with sobriety is identifying as an addict, as an alcoholic. I think... Which is interesting because I make correlations between like the transness and sobriety, and it's really easy for me to identify as a trans person, and to like
you talk about it all fucking time.
I made a career out of it, and but it's I think that like You know what it is? It's because I don't see being trans is not a, like a problem. It's not an issue, but like being an addict is an issue to tend to. Mm. And it's hard for me to find like, I'm afraid that identifying as an addict or alcoholic will conflate myself with this thing and see it as something that's integral to who I am instead of something that's changing. And then I'm just making a decision to be sober because I've identified as an addict mm-hmm. instead of doing it because this is what, like, and I know it's ultimately just semantics, but,
yeah, but it's how you, I mean, we know that mm-hmm. words have,
yeah,
hold a lot of meaning, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I struggle to identify as an addict, even though I know that that's like, that, like, I am.
Well, you have addictive tendencies.
Which is just feels like so, it's so silly to be like,
it's like tiptoeing.
Yeah, like, am I just saying that because I'm trying to justify further drinking, like future drinking?
Future drinking.
Like, or is it that, like, I'm just like, I think what it is to is that like, I kind of resent this idea that like, if you're an addict, then you are that forever. That's something that you experience forever. Mm-hmm. And that's something that will never go away. It's something you have to deal with forever. Like, I think that's a fear of mine.
That's fair. I think that's why people in sobriety stress the one day at a time thing so much.
Yeah.
While they identify as this thing. Like, I identify as an addict and an alcoholic. And to me, because I've seen it associated with so much love and community
mm-hmm.
in the way that I got sober.
Right. Through
programs. Like, I think that I have a way less negative connotation associated with it because the majority of people that I've seen identify as addicts and alcoholics are sober people
mm-hmm.
who were people I looked up to.
Mm.
And so I was like, oh, it's kind of like a cool thing to identify that way because I'm watching these people live their lives in ways that I wanted to live.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I see it. But I totally understand
yeah.
not wanting to like kind of like diagnose yourself
right.
with this thing and then be like, well, now that's like I've put myself in a box that I can't get out of.
Right.
Now.
Is that unchanging?
Yeah. And it's not about for me, it's not about like saying I'm forever this thing and I have to stay sober forever and blah, blah, blah. It's about like today. I know that if I got drunk, I'd want to drink more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So today I identify as an alcoholic
mm-hmm.
and that's why today I'm sober.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think I'm having an aha moment that like you going to these meetings and every time saying like, this is like,
yeah, I'm Ezra, I'm an addict.
Yeah. That over time, like sheds the shame about it.
For sure.
And I think that that's probably what I'm experiencing too. Yeah. At the same time, it's yeah. some shame that this is like, it feels like a fault in my being
yeah.
instead of something to be like, maybe I would feel better if I would be like, and I'm a recovering addict.
People say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've so many people yeah. say that in meetings instead of just their name,
right.
an addict, they say I'm a recovering
right.
alcoholic, recovering addict.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or recovered, even they say that.
Recovered. That feels hard to say.
The white cis men who are older typically
and
say
I'm done.
Recovered.
Yeah.
And then I do a little eye roll because I have like, my feelings about that.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
What a great combo.
I agree. I love this subject. I could talk about this forever
me too.
And ever.
Yeah. What do you love about me?
That's our new thing. We're going to say one thing that we're in love with about each mm-hmm. other at the end of every episode.
Yeah, because it's Trans in Love. Because it's Trans in Love.
The name of the podcast.
That's the name of the movie.
Movie.
Tell me.
I am in love with your evolution. I'm in love with the way that you let yourself unfold and like change and grow And watching that has been one of the biggest gifts of my entire life. Truly. It's inspiring, and it gives me so much hope. And I feel very honored to have a front row seat to this.
Thanks.
Yeah.
You know what I love about you?
What?
I love that you always choose the right thing and not the easy thing. Always. And I know that, like, there might be doubt about that sometimes, like some self-doubt about that. But the way that I watch you move through life, honoring yourself and honoring what you know is right for yourself, even if it doesn't feel good, is like a miracle to me. Because it's how I know that I can say, like, I want to be with you the rest of my life, because I know you will always be honest with yourself, and that we refuse and are both unable to exist for a second outside of what's true for us.
Yeah.
And that, like, that's why I'm able to love you so deeply, is because you're at the forefront. Mm-hmm. And that's the greatest gift.
The greatest love of all is T for T.
I'm spinning like a ballerina, but you can't see.
I'm spinning like a top. Wink, wink.
Honk, honk. Honk, honk.
Feel the top in your butt.
Whoa. That was awesome.
Thanks.
I loved this episode, and I love you.
Me too. I love you, and I love this episode too.
All right. Thank you for listening to our podcast. And if you have any thoughts, feelings, or whatever about it, you should join our Patreon and let us know, because we can have an open dialogue on Patreon, which is one thing I really love about it.
So cool. And on Patreon is full video episodes, so you can see how we physically are at this time.
Right. On these couches in this town.
You might even see my feet in this episode.
Wow.
So
if you're not running to Patreon, I don't know what's going
wiki,
on.
Wiki feet.
You're on Wiki feet. I'm not.
I am on Wiki feet. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Cheers.
Cheers. Clink.
Trends in love. Take an hour. Stay a while.
Yeah.